It's showtime.
Okay, Tokyo,
South America,
Australia,
France,
Germany,
UK,
Africa.
Here we go. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. And here we are at Titanic Tuesday for this 18th day of February 2020. There are 11 days remaining in this long, long, gray, dim, grim, dismal, miasmal month. Ugh. Ugh. But, you know what? Together, we'll get through it. Yes, we will. Hi, I'm Bob. And we've got Titanic intellect on display this evening. We've got acts of petty cruelty, meanness, stupidity. And that's just Trump. No, believe me, there's more Titanic intellect than, yeah, there really, really is. But every program here at The Horn begins with gratitude, this program being no different. And thanks very kindly to each and every one of you who helped reach the goal for the When Billionaires Choose, You Lose challenge. Thank you very kindly to Anatole, and thank you to John, and thank you very kindly to Joseph and Stephen and Frank and Lady B and Ralph. Thank you kindly. Thanks also to our subscribers for the 18th of the month. That's thanks to Charlene, and thanks to Grace. Thank you very kindly. Thanks to Stephen. So the challenge was met, and that means we have no fundraising hole this evening, just the usual $200 to keep everything rolling, and then possibly on schedule, perhaps, who knows, for a golly, maybe a fundraising free Friday on the front porch. That'd be cool, wouldn't it? We had one of those last week. That's awesome. So thank you again, and thanks to our anonymous friend for the challenge in itself. Thank you very kindly. Now, a little bit of housekeeping for the evening. Tomorrow, this is by far nowhere near a certainty, we may be home and fine and dandy and everything. Ferg has a medical procedure tomorrow, and it's scheduled for right around the noon hour. And so there's a possibility it may be difficult. I don't know. I think that's what I'm saying, is I don't know. I hope to be here tomorrow for prayer meeting Wednesday. It is possible I will not. Depending on how long the procedure takes. So just maybe make a note of it, okay? And that's Wednesday the 19th, okay? Let's see. So far, so good with Frontier. They haven't buffered up and crashed yet. And Brother Deacon Asa tells me we're streaming well and everything's working. Today, I guess, going forward in history, today, the 18th of February, 2020, will be known as the Day of the Dirtbags. Oh, well, thank you very kindly. Steve in New York says, let's kick this off with a $10 Fuck John Bolton challenge. Yeah, I know what he's talking. Bolton was asked his opinion on Nitwit Nero's conduct, and he said, oh, you'll love chapter 14 of the book. God, it's sickening. You know, there used to be a law, I think maybe there still is in some states, that said that if you killed somebody or went to prison for harming someone, that you could not then make a bunch of money by writing a book about your crime or selling the movie rights or whatever. Somehow that's what I think of when I think of John Bolton. But we always knew he was a dirtbag, a warmongering, bloodthirsty fiend. And we speculated that, you know, maybe he would turn out to be a patriot. But no, he's just another money-grubbing scumbag. More interested in selling books than he is in saving the Republic. Maybe deep down inside, he just wasn't all that upset at the trampling of the Constitution. But anyway, thank you, Steve, in New York. There's a $10 challenge. It's the $10 Fuck John Bolton challenge. And everybody who responds, we will declare joyfully, Fuck John Bolton. Thank you, Steve. Thank you very, very much indeed. So that should make things a little bit, you know, fun. Just a fun little thing we'll do. We do fun little things like that on this program. But yes, today is the Day of the Dirtbags. Rob Blagojevich. Who else? Ed DeBartolo Jr.? A big string of pardons today. Many people suspecting that this is the setup for the big pardon of Roger Stone, Paul Manafort, and But the fact of the matter is, he claimed he was pardoning Rod Blagojevich because he was prosecuted by Comey and Fitzpatrick, the same people who, of course, investigated his filthy doings. Flavio and I are on the same page right now. Flavio says, you know who he'll pardon next? Bernie Madoff. Mark my words, he's going to pardon or grant clemency to Bernie Madoff. Wouldn't surprise me. Although Bernie Madoff, remember, went to prison because he offended the wealthy people. If he'd stolen from poor people, Bernie Madoff would probably still be out on the streets. But, yeah, I could see that. Bernie Madoff's still alive. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Jesus. And, of course, there was he pardoned a woman who was convicted of doing dirty business in real estate and helping to launder Russian mob money by selling condos, you know. The exact same shit he and his filthy brood got up to. There's a correction. He commuted the sentence of Rod Blagojevich. Meanwhile, Leonard Peltier continues to rot in prison on a pretty sketchy conviction. Blagojevich has done 8 years of a 14-year sentence for having tried to sell Barack Obama's Senate seat after Barack Obama became president. Speaking of the commutation, Venerial Vespasian said, he served 8 years in jail, a long time. He seems like a very nice person. Don't know him. Love his hair. No, he didn't say that, but you can, yeah. Yep, Steve in New York says, if it had been poor folks, Madoff would be in Trump's cabinet. Oh, well played. Well played indeed. True. Bernie Kerik, the dirtbag former police commissioner of New York, tax fraud, lying to officials, Mike Milken, the king of the junk bond, securities fraud and conspiracy, Eddie DeBartolo Jr., who formerly owned the San Francisco 49ers, and paid a bribe in order to get a casino license. Like I said, the same kind of shit that Trump does. Oh, well. Now, he said of the prosecution of Blagojevich, who, by the way, was on The Apprentice with Nitwit Nero.
It was a prosecution by the same people, Comey, Fitzpatrick, the same group.
And later declared that he hadn't thought about pardoning Roger Stone at all. And as noted, that will be a little bit more complicated. Eddie DeBartolo Jr. and Rod Blagojevich and various and sundry don't have any dimes to drop on Nitwit Nero. Oh, no, of course not. No, Megan reminding me, don't forget Martin Shkreli, the pharma bro. Right. Who jacked up the price of HIV drugs and was kicked off Twitter for harassing a female journalist, Lauren Duca. As to Bolton's upcoming book, Scott in San Diego says, I'm confused, Bob. Now he's saying that the White House is going over the content to make sure he'll be allowed to publish certain chunks of it. I heard Monday that galleys of the full book, as written, currently exist and have for some months. It's my understanding that they're uncensored, as they contain everything he hoped to have be in the editions of the volume that would be available to the public. How is it that one or more of these uncensored galleys aren't in the hands of decent journalists, people's right to know and all? Well, you know, maybe you weren't tuned in that evening, but I said a few days back, maybe a couple of weeks, I don't know, it all runs together after a while, that either the Post or the Times have those that have that galley proof in total, so they've said. And it should be published in full and treated like the Pentagon Papers. But that is not the era in which we live, because I'm sure whatever publication has it is scared to death that Bernie Madoff would then sue them and get damages out of them for interfering with his economic right to make a fortune off of information that should have been given under sworn testimony. And if he does much more of this, we will know that journalistic ethics, if we had any doubts, are largely dead at those major publications. Because this begins to look an awful lot like a patriotic duty. Then again, the other side of that coin is that they have read it and they don't think it's that newsworthy. That there really isn't a smoking gun in the pages of the book, and that it would not be worth the litigious agony of publishing it a la Pentagon Papers. Yep. Randy in PA says, Madoff made off with the money. Cardinal Law laid down Cardinal Law, and Rep. Wiener showed his wiener. proving that the goddess of irony is paying very, very close attention. So there it is today, the day of the dirtbags. Yeah. Meanwhile, Nitwit Nero says that, l'etat say him.
I'm actually, I guess, the chief law enforcement officer of the country, but I've chosen not to be involved. But he is a man of great integrity. But I would be, I could be involved if I wanted to be.
You're not hurting him.
He's not the chief law enforcement officer in the country, but he heard somebody say that on Fox News TV Radio Rwanda, and it made him feel better. And that was as he was heading off to California, I guess, to talk about the poo in the streets some more. Because he was attacking the mayor of Los Angeles earlier today. For not participating and for declaring openly that law enforcement in L.A. will not participate with ICE roundups. Yeah. Ron in Raleigh says, you did notice it seems there were no people of color that needed a pardon or clemency. No racism there. Oh, no, no. How could he could be... I mean, how could he possibly be a racist? He's Trump's a person of color, too. I mean, orange is a color. Ah, well, thank you. Arnold just jumped in and said, yeah, this evening's challenge. Hell yeah. Fuck John Bolton. So there's a fuck John Bolton, and Steve's challenge is met. But if anybody else wants to yell fuck John Bolton, I'm certainly game for it. He's off the rails. There's no doubt about it. He cited approvingly the opinion of Judge Napolitano over on Fox News TV Radio Rwanda, claiming that Roger Stone should have a new trial. And then said he didn't know if Judge Amy Berman Jackson is uncorrupt.
I'm not so sure about Judge Jackson. I don't know.
So what does he think he's got? Does he think he can rig the jury? Beats the hell out of me. But he'd rather see, he wants him to get a new trial so he doesn't have to issue the pardon. Because somebody has probably given him, you know, some sort of monosyllabic pop-up book that explains all the things that Roger Stone would have to do if Roger Stone got a pardon. Yep, indeed. Ralph's pointing out orange is the new black. I wish that wasn't as true as it is. Oh, well, okay, true. Brother Deacon Asa says, Trump can't be a racist, Bob. He posthumously pardoned Jack Johnson. Yeah. Jesus. What a world. And big news out of the right-wing authoritarian ranks. The Boy Scouts have filed for bankruptcy protection. Yeah, you remember the Boy Scouts, the people who sat on their hands while Nitwit Nero threw a political hissy here in West Virginia a couple of years back. That's not why, though. The Boy Scouts are seeking bankruptcy protection because they've been hit with a tsunami of sexual abuse lawsuits. The filing came late yesterday. Chapter 11 petition filed in bankruptcy court in Delaware. The LA Times pointing out a wave of new sex abuse lawsuits have hit after several states, including California, New York, and New Jersey, recently expanded legal options for childhood victims to sue. Meanwhile, their membership is declining. In a statement, Roger Mosby, the president of the Scouts and chief executive officer, said, the Boy Scouts care deeply about all victims of abuse and sincerely apologizes to anyone who was harmed during their time in scouting. We are outraged that there have been times when individuals took advantage of our programs to harm innocent children. While we know nothing can undo the tragic abuse that victims suffered, we believe the Chapter 11 process with the proposed trust structure will provide equitable compensation to all victims while maintaining the BSA's important mission. You know, the Boy Scouts' important mission of raising up little right-wingers for the next generation, little right-wing authoritarians. I mean, I know not all are, but many are. You know, not all Scotsmen. No true Scotsmen. Curiously, the Scouts, who think that this is going to be a great trust structure, are reticent to say how many times they've been sued for how many little boys raped in the last few years. And they also don't want to say how many judgments have been taken against them or how much they've paid out in settlements. On the other hand, plaintiffs' lawyers say that the lawsuits are well into the hundreds, and other cases were settled short of trial. Now, here's the interesting part, one of the interesting parts of that bankruptcy petition. It says that the Boy Scouts hold assets of $1 billion to $10 billion and liabilities of $500 million to $1 billion. And, of course, they've structured the Scouts in such a way that the local councils are not part of the bankruptcy or of the overall structure. It got bad, though, when the Scouts insurance company said, "We don't pay. Y'all could have prevented this. This didn't have to happen." And have thus refused to compensate the Scouts for the insurance they bought, because the Scouts, at least according to their insurance companies, had, They were not exactly innocent. Now, for me, and I don't know the answer to this, I'd like to know. Dream on. Well, I know it's not a dream on sort of situation. Regarding the Boy Scouts, Brother Deacon Asa says, "This means the Vatican's going to be declaring bankruptcy any day now?" No. No, just individual dioceses. Because it's very corporate, and while a bishopric may be a wholly owned subsidiary of the Mother Church at Rome, they are financially separate. I guess even God, the almighty creator of the universe, the great big bearded juvenile delinquent in the sky, needs some degree of legal protection. But not here in West Virginia, you know, vast amounts of donated corporate money went into building a huge scout complex where they have their jamborees, and in fact where Nitwit Nero showed up and politicized what was supposed to be a decidedly non-political function. They've spent gajillions on it, and very few people around here are allowed to so much as set foot on it. Conspiracy theories have swirled around it. But be that as it may, one thing that I find particularly galling is the fact that several years ago a referendum was put on the ballot so that if the scouts decide to rent their great big humongous facility out to some third party, they don't have to pay taxes on the profits they make. And so they go by scot-free. Yeah. So, but it's bankruptcy protection. It ain't liquidation. It should probably be liquidation. Because, well, they're never not going to have a child rape problem. Just like churches are never going to not have a child rape problem, be it the Southern Baptists or the Roman Catholics. The Orthodox Jewish community is never not going to have a child rape problem because it is inherent in the structure. Because they are so godforsaken, authoritarian, pedophiles are drawn like iron filings to a magnet to these organizations, and they hide there in plain sight. Randy in PA says, maybe we ought to issue an Amber Alert for the Boy Scouts or the Boy Scouts of America Association. Pretty good, Randy. Okay, Brother Deacon Asa, Albert says headon.live is not working. Maybe refresh your browser if you can hear me. But I'm not seeing anybody else saying that. So, yeah, Brother Deacon Asa says, I see. I wasn't aware that LLC stands for Limited Liability Child Molester. Well, in all too many cases, I think it probably does. Why do I call Fox News? Why do I call Fox News TV Radio Rwanda? Well, you have to go back and look at the history of the genocide in Rwanda to understand. There was a state broadcast outlet called Radio Rwanda, and during the massacres, Radio Rwanda was used to perpetuate the slaughter, and they kept the attacking side in a state of murderous mania. And so a long time ago, Sandra and I were talking about it years ago at the time, we realized that Fox News is the American equivalent of Radio Rwanda. You know, keeping the Emrys and the Marvelines there in a furious rage over spurious claims in order to in order to perpetuate in order to make a buck and perpetuate the fierce divisions in this country. So that's why. Let's see. So, you know, just in case anybody's wondering, no, the scouts aren't going away, and more's the pity. See, that's one of those things. Regarding the Boy Scouts Jamboree site here in Fayette County, West Virginia, Scott says, regular folks can't step foot on the property, huh? For all we know, these so-called jamborees are little more than Bohemian Grove gatherings for young people. Mostly boys. I mean, you know, parents show up with their kids for these jamborees and stuff. And most of it probably doesn't take place in that setting. Most of the sexual abuse has taken place in individual councils and the churches where the scouts so often meet, and on overnight hikes and camping trips to learn woodcraft, how to get the idea. Meanwhile, on the other end of the gender spectrum, a bit of a follow-up to a story from last week. You remember how the good, God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, fundamentalist, homosexual, Christian Republicans in Tennessee were none too happy about a call to include feminine hygiene products in a sales tax holiday at the end of July. Yeah. Well, we have a follow-up on that. Senator Sarah Kyle of Memphis put forward a plea for the inclusion of the products in the sales tax holiday.
Women have monthly menstrual cycles. They need access to feminine hygiene products. They need these as an essential item for their dignity.
You'll notice she's talking really slowly because she's trying to explain it to all the good God-fearing men folk in the room who are just sitting there squirming and kind of looking away and because Republicans, because Tennessee.
That's a biological fact. Women need these products monthly, and I'm just trying to ease the burden for at least one weekend for a very small amount of money. One in five girls in the U.S. have had to leave school early or miss school entirely because they didn't have access to these products. Mr. Chairman, I would ask that I get a favorable recommendation, or in the alternative, a neutral recommendation.
Chair makes a motion for a negative recommendation.
Senator Gardenhire. Yeah. Votes aye. Senator Hale. Aye. Votes aye. Senator Yeager.
Aye.
Votes aye. Chairman Hensley.
Aye.
Votes aye. Chairman, you have four ayes.
Bill will go to finance with a negative recommendation.
Yeah. Now, I saw a story earlier today out of India where a group of dozens of school-age girls were forced to disrobe at school in order to prove to the authorities there that they were not menstruating. Explain to me how much difference there is between this good, God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, fundamentalist, homosexual, Christian Republican and his aiders and abettors. How much difference is there between him, I'm going to give it a negative recommendation, And all those other ayes that you heard were people were other Republicans agreeing to put a negative recommendation on something that women have no choice but to purchase. And in India, they apparently are, and remember, India is in the grips of its own form of fascism under that that jackass Modi. And I guess it's culturally presumed that girls on their period just can't learn real good. So when Senator Senator Sarah, when she talks about girls having to leave school or miss school entirely, Senator Sarah Kyle of Memphis, 1 in 5 girls in the U.S. either leaving school early or missing school for want of access to these products. Well, they were just not all that far from India, are we? Not very far at all. No. Isn't that annoying? There, we're back. I actually caught that before Dave or Asa did. Yay me. Jimmy in the Great Northwest says, Boy Scouts, who's assaulting these boys? Yeah, I'm sure scout leaders. Den mothers, too? Probably not. That's not the way the demographic, that's not the way the psychographics work out in this. Child abusers are most often male. Steve in New York said, I thought that Republican told us they could just put an aspirin between their knees. No, wrong. That's birth control. That's birth control, Steve. Jesus, these people. Exactly. Flavio says people have died because of the hateful, vicious propaganda on offer 24/7. Over at Fox News TV. That's why they're like Radio Rwanda. Exactly. I remember when Glenn Beck was he on Fox or was he still at Headline News? I can't recall. I think he was at Fox by then. And the Beckerhead spent night after night after night talking about the Tides Foundation and how they were progressive and commies and something had to be done. And dude listened to him day in, day out, night in, night out, and eventually drank himself a bottle of liquid courage and got his gun and was going to go shoot up the Tides Foundation in San Francisco. San Francisco! Only he got popped for DUI before he could get there, thus averting a plus one to the list of massacres in this country. Yeah, they used to have Bernie Goldberg on all the time. And then a guy read Bernie Goldberg's book, and went and shot up a Unitarian fellowship in Knoxville, Tennessee. Old news, sure, but damned well worth not forgetting. Yeah, I don't know. Some sort of technical problem, according to Steve from Georgistan. I couldn't get it to work over at TuneIn either. Well, we send from the White Rose stream to TuneIn, and maybe sometimes they're a little bit o-slay on the uptake, eh? Wouldn't be the first time. Oh, speaking of India, there's a privately run train line that runs between some of the holiest cities in India. One that runs between Varanasi in Uttar Pradesh province state to Ujjain in Madhya Pradesh. And there's one seat, and in particular, seat number 64 in coach B5 is reserved for the Hindu god Ganesh. And no one is allowed to sit in that seat. Yeah. Hey, remember, India is supposed to be a secular democracy. Yeah. And there's a... you'll have that. Because wherever you have an attempt at democracy, you will always have people doing their dead level best to subvert it. But it is Titanic Tuesday, and a day for celebrating Titanic intellect. And when it comes to Titanic intellect, you can't get any what's that, Steve in New York? The crazy. Just one fucking time, I'd love for the crazy to at least level out for a day. Well, Steve, it's not gonna, buddy. It's just not gonna. However crazy yesterday was, today will be crazier. And however crazy today is, tomorrow will be crazier still. It's a roller coaster that is all uphill. You know, that sickening feeling you get on a roller coaster when the thing's just going clack, 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 clack. Climbing that hill, and you know it's going to be terrifying when you get to the top and you're torn between wanting to just get off and climb down, or, oh, fuck, please, can't we just get this to the top and get it over with? And then again, there are people who like roller coasters. I am not one of them. Right. But no, it ain't going to level off. All we got in common is our misery, and the least we can do is share it. Mike in Cascadia, speaking of fascists and child rape, subject line, Bill Barr, did you see this 1991 local Florida newspaper editorial by an attorney who went to junior high and high school with Bill Barr? Rape comes in as Bill Barr's old man hired a young Jeffrey Epstein to teach at his prep school. 1991. November 18th, 1991. From the Florida Flambeau, what William Barr isn't telling his questioners. I'm going to have to read it later, but look it up. What William Barr isn't telling his questioners. Because, of course, Bill Barr, in addition to everything else, this isn't Wednesday, but he is a religious maniac. Subject line, dumb fucks. I wonder if those male politicians in Tennessee are the ones who seem to think women can voluntarily control their menstrual cycles like they control their bladders. Ah, yeah, I know. The Crazy Leveling Out. It's in the good book, says Scott. And Jesus said, the crazy you shall have always with you, always. So remember, kids, the only good bull is the Bible. But anyway, like I said, any Titanic Tuesday that contains a possible reference to Rafaelito Eduardo Cruz, the anointed booger-eaten future king of America, is going to be a truly Titanic intellect Tuesday, because, of course, Rafaelito Eduardo Cruz, the anointed booger-eaten future king of America, is indeed a super genius. That's why he had a plum hissy when he saw word of a piece of legislation introduced in Talabama by one of them woe man legislators. And, of course, she ain't white. We're talking about State Representative Rolanda Hollis. Well, last Thursday, she filed a bill in the legislature down there on Goat Hill in Montgomery, in that same building that still has a star on the portico, where Jefferson Davis took the oath of office of the President of the Confederacy, and somehow or another, nobody's gone up and jackhammered it out yet. Mm-hmm. But that wasn't the nature of her bill. That wasn't what got Rafaelito Eduardo Cruz, the anointed booger-eaten future king of America, got his maiden forms in a bunch. No. The story harkened back to something that happened in the legislative session last year, when Alabama introduced HB 314, the Human Life Protection Act. We talked about that extensively. Governor Kay Ivey, who said, by signing this bill, I hereby declare that we value life in Alabama. And now I'm signing the death warrant for a feller that may or may not be guilty. Fuck him. Kill him anyway. Because we value life in Alabama. Well, enter State Representative Rolanda Hollis, a Birmingham Democrat. And the bill she filed, HB 238, says that every man on or before his 50th birthday must have a vasectomy to be paid for at the man's own expense. Rolanda Hollis is not fooling around. He would undergo a vasectomy within 1 month of his 50th birthday or the birth of his third biological child, whichever comes first. She is a thorn in the hide of all these magnificently hypocritical Republican Alabama. Because, among other things, she noted, under existing law, there are no restrictions on the reproductive rights of men. And last year, she read a poem during the debate on the Human Life Protection Act. And the name of that poem was, If My Vagina Was a Gun. I'd kind of like to see that poem. Because that must have stung real bad. It probably has something to do along the lines of if her vagina was a gun, no Republicans would want to regulate it. Yeah. So anyway, Rafaelito Eduardo Cruz, the anointed booger-eating future king of America, done had a plum hissy fit. And he leaped over to the Twitter. And he said, and he tweeted the news story about the mandatory vasectomy bill. And he said, "Yikes. A government big enough to give you everything is big enough to take everything, literally. Alabama Democrat proposes bill mandating all men have vasectomy at age 50 or after third child." Suffice to, one of two things has to be true in this case. Either Rafi Alito knows exactly why she proposed the legislation and he's just trying to get the rubes stirred up. Or else he really is that stupid. It's kind of a toss-up, really. "Well, they'll never come to Texas and do something like that. Here in Texas, you can have my seminal vesicle when you pry it from my cold... Well, no, I usually like to have it a little warmed up, and maybe a little of Daddy's anointing oil seems to help a little. But you know what I mean." "Well, hell," says Ron and Raleigh, "we all know those creatures are unclean when the curse is upon them. We cannot have them spreading their filth unchecked." No, wrong word, Ron. Unfettered. Unfettered. Remember Doug Mouthful of Collins Collards the other day, getting his weird on, talking about all those women's out there having the abortions without the leg irons? Unfettered abortions. Yeah. Ralph says, "Oh my, Rolanda Hollis, I hope that's her name." Yes, Rolanda Hollis. Darlene in Connecticut says, "You want to control women and girls and put them in their place, then make their access to feminine products cost prohibitive or unavailable. This country lost its shit the other day because some women from PETA bared their breasts at Sanders' rally. Imagine walking around with blood gushing out of your you-know-what or walking around with blood-stained pants. Talk about psychological devastation, humiliation, not to mention the physical discomfort. If you're having a bad period, you're pretty laid up as it is without having to worry about having enough sanitary napkins and tampons on hand. Menopausal? Paramenopausal? That's even more uncertain in terms of timing and flow. Truth be told, men, generally speaking, would not be able to handle one day of having a period. You're not as strong or as tough as you think y'all are. You've got it made." Precisely. And then there's something else out there called polycystic ovarian syndrome, which is a monumental nightmare for women who have it. But, you know, let's not trouble the delicate fifis and sensibilities of the good God-fearing Christians of Tennessee with that kind of stuff. Now, shall we? No, of course not. The Horn Ad Hoc Research Department got right on matters, and let's see if this is what we're after. Let's see if the link is functional. I do believe. And it also goes back to women's rights protests in Texas. So far, it's a bunch of animation. May have to... No, that doesn't seem to... I think I've got text here. Megan and Ralph's sending it along as well. I probably should get Agnes in here to, but we'll have to deal with my male voice on this. Sorry. If my vagina was a gun, you would stand for its rights. You would ride on buses and fight all the fights. If my vagina was a gun, you would treat it with care. You wouldn't spill all its secrets because, well, why go there? If my vagina was a gun, you'd say what it holds is private. From cold, dead hands we could pry. Surely, you surely would riot. If my vagina was a gun, its rights would all be protected, no matter the body count or the children affected. If my vagina was a gun, I could bypass security. Concealed carry laws would ensure I'd have impunity. If my vagina was a gun, I wouldn't have to beg you. I could hunt this great land and do all the things men do, but my vagina is not a gun. It is a mightier thing, with a voice that rings true, making lawmakers' ears ring. Vaginas are not delicate, they are muscular and magic, so stop messing with mine with legislation that's tragic. My vagina's here to demand from the source. Listen to the voices of thousands, or feel their full force. And one of these days, that full force may be felt. But first, we got to figure out some way to convince, like, for instance, the 62% of white women in Alabama who, even though they had credible evidence that Roy Tola Moore was a pedophile, still ran to the polls and voted for him over Doug Jones because that there Doug Jones supports the abortion. And that seems rather a tall hill to climb. And it's probably not one of those situations where you can wait for the cemetery and natural processes to end the problem. Because, see, that's why every year the fetus fetish freaks descend on Washington, D.C. in January or early February, and they bring busloads and busloads and busloads of their little impressionable spawn with them, from various and sundry medieval Catholic schools all around the country and Baptist schools and whatnot, and they all stand there in the cold in Washington D.C. and fuss about the precious little fetuses. So they warp the minds of the children early, and hopefully that way the children stay warped. There were a couple of times I was in D.C. that time of year, and I saw them, and I just couldn't help wondering, I wonder how many of those children that are there to stand up for the precious little fetuses had no one to stand up for them when somebody inside their church was raping them. Because it's statistically impossible that that was not the case for at least some of those children. Going back to the seat for Ganesh, I'm curious about how large that seat is. I've seen drawings of Ganesh. He looks like an elephant. Yeah, but he can be a small-ish elephant. I mean, he's a god. Right. Jeff on the left says, yes, Raphaelito, we know what you mean, man. And that'll make you go blind, so stop! Dude probably has to shave his palms three times a day. Megan and Ron and Raleigh both pointed this story out to me, brought it to my attention. Senator Tom Cotton has once again put forth a conspiracy theory that the coronavirus was a bioweapon developed by the Chi-Coms, which got away from them. Of course, he has no proof of this, but what the hell? Proof? We don't need no stinking proof. And you know, further proof, it has gotten more legs than most of the that stupid brain-dead allegation has gotten more legs than most of the actual fact-based reportage, such as it is, regarding the coronavirus outbreak. And it's scary shit, because the one thing, a panic, you do not want a panic, because human beings don't do well when they panic. And even someone like Chris Cillizza, whom I just generally don't hold in very high esteem, managed to say something reasonably intelligent. He said, Senator Tom Cotton isn't an infectious disease expert, which is why it's odd that the Arkansas Republican decided to wildly speculate about the origins of the novel coronavirus during an appearance on Fox News this past Sunday. Asked by anchor Maria Bartiromo, why do these diseases keep coming out of China? Cotton responded, This virus did not originate in the Wuhan animal market. Several of the original cases did not have any contact with that food market. We don't know where it originated. We also know that just a few miles away from that food market is China's only biosafety level 4 super laboratory that researches human infectious diseases. We don't have evidence that this disease originated there, but we at least have to ask the question. Really? So we don't have any evidence, but we're still going to ask the question. That's known as rumor mongering, Tom. And, well, you know, you're a Christian, and you'd probably like to see the Ten Commandments on every available bit of wall space in America. There's that one thing there about bearing false witness, not supposed to do it. But there he is, doing it. Chris Cillizza quotes Dr. William Schaffner, Dr. William Schaffner, an infectious disease specialist at Vanderbilt University Medical Center, who said, regarding Cotton's hypothesis that the virus originated in connection with a lab, I've seen no one provide any solid information to support that theory. I think at this point you can draw a line through it and say it didn't happen. Everyone with whom I've spoken, or whom I've read, thinks that it has come from a natural source, as did the SARS virus, as did the MERS virus. Both of those were also coronaviruses in animal populations that jumped to the human species in the natural environment. By now, scientists all over the world have looked at this virus, and nothing nefarious has come up. Meanwhile, I guess a majority of people who actually show up to vote in Arkansas will be, it's okay, we like him. He's presidential. And he is one of the dangerous ones. He's not an idiot like Trump. And remember, out there in the future, there yet waits for our country, to our horror, a Republican who isn't a complete and total idiot, who will know how to use the reins of power to finish the job that Republicans have been doing on working people and, you know, non-fascists for generations. Jesus. Yeah, I read that quote from Dr. Schaffner particularly because that needs to be heard. And the other thing that needs to be taken into account, and something that, well, Tom Cotton is never going to mention, is the melting of the permafrost. Those portions of the planet that have remained frozen for tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of years, and have trapped in literal frozen storage life forms, and a virus is a life form, life forms utterly and completely unknown to humanity. Stuff that was frozen away before we got down out of the trees, even. Stuff that was definitely frozen when we were walking around with our bare hide, our bare, you know, our bare skin robes and shit. Post ice age, that stuff was frozen away by then. And so we have no idea what its impact will be on either animal or human populations. Now that the permafrost is thawed and that shit is able to get out and get in the air and transmit. Remember, most of the diseases, for instance, the diseases that white European colonizers carried across the Atlantic and brought to the New World and managed to wipe out the single most populated region of the world at that time. Well, human beings got those diseases because they jumped from animals to humanity because of what we now refer to as animal husbandry. We don't call it chicken pox because it makes you cluck like a chicken, nor do we call it cowpox because it makes you moo. The various poxes, measles, anthrax, what have you, they come out of our close contact with animals via domestication. But don't be looking for Tom Cotton to talk about the risk that viruses released from the melted permafrost pose. Because in Tom Cotton's world, the permafrost isn't melting. Because Tom Cotton's world is comprised entirely of his own weird imagination. See, it would be easier for Tom Cotton if it was a disease that got loose out of a lab because, well, then, you know, you can just nuke the Chi-Coms and bring them to justice. It's hard to fire a Tomahawk cruise missile at a virus. Some would say it is overkill. Or perhaps underkill. Or non-kill. Godforsaken. Yeah. Ron in Raleigh says, my favorite Hindu god, Ganesh, son of Shiva and Parvati, is the god of strength and protection. He's my favorite. My second favorite is Kali. Kali, for the love of killing. Kill for the love of Kali, patron god of the thuggy. Ganesh's festival this year is on August 22nd. I remember when Homer Simpson got in trouble with Apu for offering a peanut to Ganesh. Jimmy in the Great Northwest says, yes, Ganesh is a small elephant, an Indian elephant. I don't know if that's still small enough to sit on a train car seat. Occam's Razor. And, of course, we're buffered up and gone again. Damn it. Okay. All right, back. Another election year. And Randy in PA says, remind me again, Corona, Ebola, what else? Yeah. another election year scary virus. Well, you know, association is not causation, but damn, it's kind of interesting. Subject line, Aunt Flo. Lady B writes, riding the Crimson Tide, on the rag, Jesus having a menstrual cycle was both a blessing and a curse. A blessing in that you knew you weren't pregnant. Yeah, I know that wasn't necessarily a guarantee either, but let's accept it for the evidence it usually was. But a fucking pain in the ass more than a curse it was. Started mine at fucking age 11. We were poor. Thank God for public restroom toilet paper. I was always heavy. It fucking sucked. By age 38, for some reason, I'm bleeding every day like a stuck pig. I'd already had to have 4 units of blood infused. Doc says we'll cure your anemia if you let us take your uterus out. Cool. Good riddance. Wasn't going to have kids anyway. How do you tell an only child what it's like to grow up with 8 siblings? How do you tell a man what it's like to have a period? Hint, you shouldn't have to. Let women make the decisions for women that only women can make. As far as the childbearing issue, you want to say, wear protection, guys, invent a pill that you promise to take every day, or get a vasectomy. Other than that, make the baby-making decision together or commit to it. Otherwise, stop having sex. But really, Bob, bitch can't have a period if she's pregnant now, can she? God, this shit's really turning into a real-life Handmaid's Tale. Oh, yes. I cannot imagine what it's like to have a penis and testicles. I can't imagine what it's like to be able to pee while standing up. I could, but it wouldn't be half as neat. My point is, if it's not your specialty, why do you want to pretend you're the doc to fix it? We will always have both sexes, and we will always have women with periods. We found a pill for erections. Let us women deal with what we grew up dealing with all our lives and the way we knew how to deal with it. Waive the goddamn tax on sanitary products. Make our lives easier, and we'll try to do the same. Get it? Got it? Good! Now, finish watching sports ball, and we'll order in for the night. I work, too. You want to eat? Cook it your goddamn self. Lady B always brings her A-game. I don't under... Well... Most of the objections, most of the ooh factor... all of that comes straight out of patriarchal religion. And patriarchal religion, of course, rose up, my personal theory, rose up as a means, we talked about this a little bit before, of men trying to assert their stupidity. Asserting one's stupidity is never a good thing. It probably comes along contemporaneously with the rise of sedentary agriculture, because somebody had to do all the hard work. It is an uncontested fact that hunter-gatherers, male and female alike, worked a hell of a lot less than sedentary agricultural societies do. They had more leisure time, and yet they managed to also manage their family size, which meant that the women had a say. And some of the earliest manifestations of physical art that we have from the archaeological record is of fertility goddesses. Or they actually break out into the prepubescent, the childbearing, and the crone. And they were all revered equally. Not using crone as a pejorative, that's from the academic language that I was once taught. Maybe it's changed. I don't know. But look at agricultural societies or cultures that practice agriculture on something of a resemblance to our ancient forebears. And you'll find that the women get worked to goddamn death. And the guys sit around and grunt and scratch themselves and pick at things. Yeah. Ron and Raleigh's found a t-shirt. Whoa. Ganesha Lights 3D hoodie. Ron saying, wouldn't you like to sport one of these down to the Rippy Mart? I think it would look spectacular, Ron. And then someone would probably burn me at the stake. Darlene in Connecticut. Scientists were warning about the release of deadly bacteria and viruses decades ago when the Amazon rainforest was starting to be deforested and all that soil was being churned up and releasing deadly microbes into the atmosphere. Long live Ganesh. Yeah, he seems rather, as your gods go, a rather benevolent one. Maybe that's why he's so popular. We're going to fuck ourselves right out of a planet, aren't we? Sure feels that way sometimes. So here's the good news. With the fuck John Bolton challenge, courtesy of Steve. We actually got started on fundraising this evening, and we're down to 170 to go. So hopefully, you know, hey, how about some new subscribers? I know. I always say that, and then it doesn't happen, but got to keep saying it in hopes that, right. So we got 17 at 10, 10 at 17, whatever. And we'll take, it's not really a break. I just like what they have to say. Brad and Desi won't be with us on Thursday because of coverage of the upcoming Nevada pageant, which, curiously, has Michael Bloomberg in it, but not Tom Steyer. Because Tom Steyer's a billionaire, too, but they would not waive the individual donor requirements for Tom Steyer, but they waived them for Michael Bloomberg. Go figure. And of course, he's had a long public career, and some of the really nasty shit he's said about people is beginning to come out. And it's not inspiring, and it doesn't look like the kind of stuff that you want to put up against if you're trying to beat Donald Trump. If you want to beat Donald Trump, you've got to put up somebody against him who doesn't have a long history of being the same kind of racist that Donald Trump is. How did that whole super predator thing work out back in 2016 when it got good and weaponized? Yeah, you get my meaning. But no, we're gonna have another pageant. This one in Nevada. It'll feature Michael Bloomberg, who may come out, and I don't know who's carrying it, who's moderating it. Will they allow him to the space in which to focus on Nitwit Nero? I don't know. And I don't. Maybe I'll peep in on it, but Jesus Christ. I'm weary of the pageants. So anyway, the green news. And maybe during these 6 minutes, we go from 170 down to something less. Cool? If you want to help out, run over to headon.live, click on the contribute tab.
It's Tuesday, February 18, 2020.
Tonight, relentless rain causing more river flooding and major damage across the South.
Yet another state now grappling with extreme rains and floods. Antarctica hits another record high. Trump EPA guts another public health pollution standard. Plus,
I'm done with fossil fuels. We're done.
CNBC pundit warns the writing is on the wall for fossil fuels.
Did someone in Jim Cramer's studio have a hairball there?
Apparently.
All of those stories and more straight ahead from BradBlog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
These stocks don't want to be owned by younger people. You're seeing divestiture by a lot of different funds. It's going to be a parade.
Wow. That's a really tough stream to swim against.
Start swimming, lady. This is your Green News Report.
We're in a new world. They're tobacco.
That's a rough prognosis. I'm going to think some more about that.
We're watching. Prognosis negative.
Okay, Desi Doyen, I know how much you cannot stand billionaires, but there is one billionaire who is now committing to give $10 billion to fight the climate crisis?
Yes. Billionaire Jeff Bezos of Amazon announced he's pledging $10 billion to fund climate solution research grants. Kudos to Amazon employees who organized to pressure Bezos to do more on climate change. And it is great what he is doing, but it is barely a dent in his fortune. Critics also note that Bezos could make a huge difference immediately just by canceling Amazon's oil and gas contracts.
Yeah, and they could start paying taxes. But I guess it's better to give $10 billion to fight the climate crisis than give it to Donald Trump to drill for more oil.
Meanwhile, Antarctica has done it again, breaking a new all-time high temperature record. Brazilian scientists recorded a balmy 68 degrees Fahrenheit, 68, on Antarctica's Seymour Island on February 9th, breaking the previous record set just 3 days before. In an interview with CBS, NASA scientist Gavin Schmidt explained the heat is not just on in Antarctica. The entire planet just experienced its hottest January since record keeping began in the 1800s.
In the U.S., this is the warmest winter that we've had on record. This has been extremely warm. Records are breaking across Europe and in Siberia. We're seeing massive temperature changes in almost all of the oceans. It's a cascading effect.
One effect: a state of emergency in Mississippi. In a scene that is becoming all too familiar and frequent around the United States, weeks of relentless rains have overwhelmed flood control systems and reservoirs in both Mississippi and Tennessee, triggering the worst flooding in nearly 40 years around Jackson, Mississippi's state capital. And more rain is on the way, warns Republican Governor Tate Reeves.
We do not anticipate this situation to end anytime soon. If you have not evacuated yet, we urge you to do so.
And recovery from the floods is going to be expensive. Remember last year's record floods in the upper Midwest?
I do.
Those caused billions in damages and decimated farmers. In Michigan, state officials warned this week that it will cost roughly $100 million to repair and upgrade infrastructure at about 40 locations around the state that were damaged by last year's long flood event. Meanwhile, the Trump EPA is trying to roll back yet another Obama-era pollution standard, even though the utility industry does not want them to. The mercury and air toxics rule has succeeded in cutting 85% of toxic mercury pollution emitted by coal-fired power plants, and it did it at just one-third of the projected cost. But the Trump administration is trying to permanently change how the federal government calculates the costs and benefits from pollution regulations by not including any side benefits, like when a new regulation simultaneously reduces other additional toxic pollutants, because that would make it appear that new regulations have little or no benefits that would justify the costs to industry.
So this regulation gets rid of mercury in the air and water that is severely damaging on all sorts of levels. It ended up costing much less than expected, than industry said it would. The benefits have been much higher. And now you've got the Trump administration trying to roll it back anyway, even though the industry affected by it does not want it to be rolled back.
Exactly.
Brilliant.
The Trump EPA is trying to prop up the dying coal industry for a few more years at the expense of Americans' health.
Well, who cares about Americans' health, I guess.
Finally, tectonic shifts appear to be underway in the oil industry. Just days before oil giant BP announced that it's shifting strategy to diversify and cut its contribution to global warming, CNBC commentator Jim Cramer warned that he believes fossil fuels are not a good long-term investment.
We're starting to see investment all over the world. We're starting to see the big pension funds saying, listen, we're not going to own them anymore. The world's changed, and we're in the death knell phase.
Wow. Jim Cramer saying, get rid of your fossil fuels.
Yeah.
We've been telling you to sell those fossil fuels for years, and you've lost Jim Cramer, as they say. For much more on all of these stories and the ones we couldn't get to today, please check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. Find, follow, and share us planet-wide on the Facebooks and the Twitters at Green News Report. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
Has the right greetings are the word. A million
stars above. And let's, well, we're about halfway through the program. Like I said, thanks to Anatole and Steve and our buddy Arnold. We've only got $170 to go to keep up with fundraising this evening. And if we can do that and do the same tomorrow and Thursday, we can have ourselves a fundraising free Friday. And wouldn't that be awesome? A fundraising free Friday on the front porch. No miracle necessary. So, you know, maybe. Maybe. But for now, let's see if we can get any cooperation out of the stress line and check in with Dave in the blind. Hey, Dave.
Hey, Bob.
How are you?
I called with some... I'm doing fantastic, man. I've got some cheery news that will brighten the Horn congregation's day. My niece, Victoria, had her little boy on the 30th of January. And he is the most handsome little devil you ever saw. But, and my brother turned 50 last week. So, and that's my brother's stepdaughter.
Oh,
so
nice.
I've been teasing him about being a grandpa. Mercilessly, of course.
Natural.
But, yeah. And it's been going pretty good for me. I had to talk my ex-wife, the beloved Christine, out of illegally buying a firearm. Not because I don't think she knows how to use it. I know she knows how to use it, but she's under psychiatric care.
It probably, I'm sure the NRA and the gun humpers would take issue with me saying this, but probably not the best idea to have one.
Well, you know, and traditionally she has been questioning the
And let me be clear, not because Hitler. People with diagnoses of some form of mental illness are somehow more prone to violence. The opposite is the truth. But it's the uncertainty factor and the fact that, I mean, it's just, you know, when you got a gun in the home, you are monumentally more likely to have an accident or an incident involving the unwanted discharge of said weapon.
Well, when the hepatite Hitler signed that executive order allowing the mentally ill to purchase firearms, Christine said, what the ever-living fuck? Because she understands all that. But these maggots have got this woman scared. And Bob, this woman don't scare easily. But I did get her to agree that if she started thinking like that, she needed to tell somebody. I made her promise that. See, that's what a lot of people don't understand about some mental illnesses. If you tell somebody, look, promise me you will tell somebody you're having a problem. Even if they don't want to, if they've made that promise to you, a lot of times they'll go ahead and do it because they've promised you and they don't want to disappoint you. I don't know if I've told this story, but Christine was poisoned with PCP, a near lethal dose of PCP.
PCP in, just a minute. You dropped. Hang on. Well, call dropped entirely. Sorry about that, Dave. I don't know why that happened. Genuinely, I do not. Try back if you want to. Are you back?
Yeah, I'm back, Bob.
Yeah, I couldn't.
I don't know what happened.
A near lethal dose of PCP? Is that what you were saying? The horse tranquilizer?
Yeah. Yeah, and this was back in the days of old 666 himself.
Oh, yeah.
And this is something that's really pissing me off. This is the Titanic intellect of the right wing. They love the veterans. They love them with a side of fries and slaw. Because originally Christine had, when she got her 100% disability, her housing benefits. And she went to apply for them again. And because her discharge was a general discharge, and they marked it as a behavioral issue, even though it was honorable, she's denied benefit. And my brother, who is a retired Army officer, told her to apply to get a DD-214 change to reflect that it was a service-connected incident.
Yeah.
And she's so frustrated. She's like, it's going to take another 15 years, and I don't have the time or the money to do it.
I hope
now, personally,
yeah, one,
I think
one
that
hopes
kind
it doesn't.
Needs to stop.
Yeah, it does. And, you know, I saw one report that made its way around Twitter the other day of a guy with stage 4 lung cancer, applied for disability, and said, I got stage 4 lung cancer, and was just denied out of hand. No explanation, just denied. And what people have to understand is that is the way the system is designed. And it's designed that way because...
And it's been designed that way for decades.
Right. And as with most things, you can trace it back. You know that line in Jimmy Buffett's Margaritaville where he says, but I know, da-da-da-da-da-da, it's some woman's fault.
That is my own damn fault.
Well,
yeah.
What it boils... No. If you turn that into a social policy song, it's but I know da 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 da. It's some Republican's fault, because what happens is every time we get something good for America, Republicans start attacking it and making it harder for it to do the good that it was designed to do. Social Security is a case, particularly Social Security disability and SSI. So they deny you out of hand, so then you got to go back and appeal, because that way you can keep people out of the system. You can keep a certain number of people out of the system. They'll just go, well, God damn it, fuck it. Or, you know, just die.
You know doctors.
Yes.
And you've been to law school, so I'm sure you know a couple of lawyers or two. Now, which do you think wrote the following? Cerebral palsy affecting the lower legs is not a permanently disabling condition.
It sounds like a lawyer to me.
Bingo, that's the letter I got to Social Security the first time I applied.
Right, and see, what that's not a medical diagnosis, that is a legal diagnosis. That is to say, that is a determination made by application of the law to the application's facts. Two different meanings of the word, verbal and noun. So they're saying,
right.
And so what they do, you then have to go back and appeal and grind through the time. And it worked.
Which I did.
Yeah. So I hope it doesn't take that long for her. But whatever it takes, you just have to be persistent. Because as that old saying goes, nothing can take the place of persistence. Not talent, not energy, not personality. persistence and persistence alone, the dogged determination not to take no for an answer.
Yeah, I think she's wearing out. She finally agreed to take some time off for herself. She's only working 3 days a week now. But she's 61 years old now, Bob. She's earned the right to have some time for herself. Hell, everybody should have some time for themselves, for their health, if nothing else.
Well,
anyway, I thought I'd brighten the congregation's day.
Yeah, little ray of sunshine and all of that. Yeah.
Well.
But no, you did have happy.
I tried to follow your example.
Yeah, I know. Well, probably not the best thing. Following me is probably not the best thing because I think I stepped in something.
Oh, is that what I smelled? Okay, that explains that.
Well, Dave, you have yourself a good evening. Give Christine our best. Tell her to hang tough, not to give up, and our best to the proud new grandpa, and the little fella.
All right, Bob.
All right, you
take care
of yourself. Bye now. And we'll keep things rolling. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob, it's me, Reggie from Decatur, Georgia.
Well, hey, Reggie, how are you?
Just fine, Bob, just fine. So how do you feel about Rush Limbaugh, or as I like to call him, brought about like the turkey, giving family morals and value advice to a gay man named Pete and his husband?
I talked about that at considerable length, I think, last night.
Right, but you know, like
yeah, he's a scumbag. I mean, look, he's a scumbag. Scumbags are going to scumbag.
Of course he is, but I mean, why does he have gay? I don't know, sex on his mind. Is he himself gay
there's no point in speculating about something like that. He merely knows. He knows the hatreds and biases of his audience, and his audience are the people who give him his $50 million a year lifestyle, and so he will play to the ugliest, nastiest, most filthy, most base, disgusting impulses of them. He himself is nothing, but he serves as a warning and a mirror of just how awful people in this country can be.
Yeah, but how come such a nothing become such a popular, successful radio talk show in over 30-something years?
Well, there's a lot of luck and privilege involved. He came from wealth. He came from wealth, and he never actually had to work at anything.
Right.
You know, he went from he came up through the ranks to a certain extent.
Right.
You can still go and find air checks of him as Jeff Christie in Pittsburgh.
You mean Rush Limbaugh? Yeah.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Yeah, when he was just another DJ.
All right.
And he goes from there to California and California to New York. And they came up with a business model that made him money and made his program attractive to desperate talk radio program directors who just needed to fill airtime.
Right.
And he was giving them the ability to fill 3 hours of airtime at no cost to them, and they got to run their own ads, but they also had to run his.
Right, which he still does to this very, very day.
Yeah, it's the model.
Right. But he always has gay sex on his mind a lot when it comes to people like Pete Buttigieg and everybody else who's gay in this world. And yet he doesn't even...
Well, maybe... A lot of these right-wing jackasses are so deeply repressed that they cannot express their sexuality, so they get off thinking about somebody else's.
Right, and nobody else is thinking about them, right. Nobody even knows.
Well, I mean, I confess, I do. I from time to time, I think about Rush Limbaugh and the woman that's allegedly his wife that he keeps in a pit.
Right. But I'm
it puts the lotion on its skin, food. My friends, or else it gets the hose again. Yeah. Brought to you by General Steel Buildings and Lumber Liquidators. The flooring of the pit where I keep my wife, my friends, is made with only the finest hardwoods harvested from a deforested South Asian, South Pacific island. And I can tell you, she really appreciates it down in the pit.
Yeah, but we don't even know if she's alive or dead down there, do we, Bob? And this is the guy who always claims that he has talent alone from God.
Yeah, well,
I thank God thought he wants his talent back.
Well, right. That's the thing with the announcement we got a couple of weeks ago. God finally put in the margin call.
Yeah, he wants his talent back, and he wants to give it to somebody else, well deserving of it. And then this guy used to smoke cigars, Cuban or whatnot. I mean, Rush Limbaugh, his formerly nicotine stained hands and fingers as he rattles his papers around. And God knows if that golden lazy boy there has been, sterilized because he's been saying it all these years. And that goes for his EIB microphone, too. His gold painted EIB microphone. I wonder if that's sterilized, too, because he's been talking through it all these years. You know what I mean,
bro? Yeah, well, you know. They should probably just stuff him in a when the time comes, they should just stuff him in a toxic waste barrel and weight it down real good and drop it in the Mariana Trench.
You mean with his easy lazy boy chair and his golden yabbery microphone held in his hand?
If it'll fit in the toxic waste barrel.
Well, that's good to know and that's good to hear, Bob. But like you said, man. They're so repressed about their own sexual orientation that they can't express freely and admittedly like everybody else is about the other sexuality by projecting their own towards them, correct?
Yeah, well, I mean, it's not complicated at all, Reggie. He's a moral cesspit, okay? Period.
Right, and Donald Trump told him not to apologize, never apologize for those gay guy comments that he made last week. Yeah, Donald Trump told Rush Limbaugh not to apologize for that. Don't ever apologize. I read that somewhere on the internet today. What do you have to say about that? All that, Bob?
Republicans don't apologize. IOKIYAR. It's okay if you're a Republican.
Right.
Plain and simple.
Right. And you got Nutmeg saying that he won't vote for Trump, and she'll damn sure they won't vote for Mike Bloomberg. Her and Whoopi Goldberg got into the pit where her joint.
Hey, Reggie, you're breaking up, buddy. We'll have to try. We'll talk again another day. Okay, I don't know what's going on here, but I'm getting every fourth word or so. You take care of yourself. All right.
Right. Yeah, you do too, Bob.
Later now.
And keep dry, Bob.
I'm trying.
Keep dry more.
Yep, trying to. Later. Bye now.
Right.
Calling from Decatur, that's our buddy Reggie. You know, I mentioned the permafrost and the viruses trapped in there, and Darlene mentioned the stuff that was loosed by virtue of the deforestation of the Amazon. And along those lines, I find this absolutely fascinating. In the English countryside of Lincolnshire, not Lancashire, Lincolnshire, England, at a place known as Thornton Abbey, not Downton, Thornton, they did archaeologists did an excavation, and the results were recently published. They were able to date the graves to around 1348 to 1349. It's a mass grave. And if you know your medieval history, you know what happened in Europe in 1348. The plague, the Black Death, England took it particularly hard, having not a third, as was the case broadly over the course of Western Europe, but fully half of the English population was killed by bubonic plague. And they had not, archaeologists had not before seen mass graves in the English countryside. But they learned a ton out of this one. Thornton Abbey had a medieval hospital because, see, when Europeans went to war. And tried to slaughter the Muslim world, and Jews too, one should note. The siege and sack of Jerusalem remains a bloody and filthy thing, and the massacre of prisoners at Acre by Richard the Lionheart, they learned about things like bathing and hygiene. Because it wasn't, you know, it wasn't that prevalent back home, and so they came back, and they one of the things they brought back with them was the concept of the hospital. And there was a medieval hospital at Thornton Abbey, and over the course of a few days, 48 people or more died, and were buried. They were carefully wrapped in shrouds. They were laid down in the mass grave so their bodies weren't touching. And so today, the report was published in the journal Antiquity. And among other things, they analyzed the teeth recovered from 16 of the people buried in the mass grave in Lincolnshire. And those teeth revealed the DNA of something called Yersinia pestis. And that is the pathogen that causes, that brought on what is referred to as the Black Death. They compared it with the DNA from the plague in London and found that, it was the same DNA. So, just a reminder, as if we needed one, of what you know, unchecked disease process can do. The people of 1348 and 1349, of course, were very limited in their understanding of science, so naturally they did awful things like, anytime something bad happened to a Christian in Europe, they found a Jew to blame for it. And so there were pogroms, murders, massacres. The entire mindset of Europe changed from one of a sort of happy-ish outlook of, eat, drink, and be merry, to an absolute death cult. It is with the arrival of the plague that we see, all the skeletal, the images of death and skeletons and grim reapers and whatnot suddenly appear in European art and imagery. And I saw the story in Antiquity, and I immediately thought of the panic that dirtbag Tom Cotton is trying to spread. Because once you decide that you've got somebody you can blame for a disease outbreak, guess what happens to the people you blamed for the disease outbreak? They become othered. And othering is absolutely necessary before you can start the slaughtering. And of course, Tom Cotton is a big old military hawk, and he's never met a problem he didn't want to solve at the muzzle of a gun. But it's an absolutely fascinating story. An excavation, a survey beginning in 2011 and only recently completed. They've calculated the ages of people in the mass grave. They ranged from 1 year old to 45. Apparently, it was hard in particular on the young because a lot of those 48 bodies were between 1 year old and 17 years old. And somehow it feels like it's beneficial that we take note of things like this. Scott in San Diego says, subject line, stirring up old bugs. Do we even know for sure that oil, which I've understood to be the liquid ancient byproduct of the effects of time and tremendous pressure upon decayed plant and animal life, can we say with complete assurance that drilling for that stuff and bringing it to the surface doesn't release pathogens? I mean, it's bad enough that oil is toxic anyway, and the refining, then the burning of it, creates massive negative impacts upon health, well-being, and planetary sustainability. No. And it's like, well, we know, for instance, that fracking produces massive amounts of toxic ultrafine particulates, and we know that the proprietary fracking fluid is liquid death itself, and that it gets pumped into our aquifers. So I think you could probably say that oil itself and the strata where the oil is found are anaerobic environments. And we've got a pretty good idea of what happens when oil gets all over the ground. But no, I don't know. Then again, we drill in the Arctic, and that's where we know some of those formerly frozen pathogens are. So, like I said, it's in the journal Antiquity. You can probably find a write-up of it if you just look up Medieval Mass Grave, Lincolnshire, England. We are not nearly so far advanced as we think we are. That's a good one. Will in Chicago says, good evening. If Jews did not exist in the Middle Ages, we would need to have been invented. From the moment Paul took that little cult out of the Levant and over across Turkey and into the Attic Peninsula and the Peloponnese and on to the Italian Peninsula, it was not going to play well. Because prior to that, in the Roman Empire, they were reasonably tolerant. There was a substantial Jewish population in Rome before the... But that's ancient history, and we'll do that again on another day. But it's an absolutely true observation, Will. Let's run over and see what's up with Todd. Hey, Todd.
Hey, listen. I just have four little issues here.
Let's go through all of them.
So the first one, you know, I think most sentient people are getting tired of folks that don't like women. Like, do they? I mean, either they're just fucking, either they're just stupid. They didn't go to biology class, like human biology, or they don't understand that some women need birth control because of endometriosis and other issues.
Well, in those instances, the birth control is a side issue, and what you're doing is you're doing the hormonal medical treatment.
Well, all I'm saying is, if you've ever lived with someone or had, you know, a significant other who has heavy bleeding, it's real. It's not funny. It's not, you know, it's just. So they need to shut the fuck up. Now, I really wasn't going to try to curb, but I mean, damn, they're fucking ignorant. And it's mostly old, crusty ass white men. I don't understand.
Fear. Look, the dual tracks, the dual parallel tracks of fear and ignorance. You know, we're told in Euclidean geometry that two parallel lines will never meet. That all falls apart when you get into curved space time and all of that shit. But the dual tracks of fear and ignorance, if they don't touch, they can certainly holler across back and forth to each other. And that's what drives, and you know, it comes in different guises, like, you know, my faith. But that's what drives most of these nasty old white men. Just is. Fear and ignorance. And that fear and ignorance is inculcated in them practically from birth via religious traditions, mainly Christian religious traditions, although certainly not exclusively. God knows Judaism has its fair, more than its fair share of misogyny. So does Islam, and so does Hinduism, Buddhism, all the isms. They all have at their core an essential basis of misogyny, because they all arose out of a desire on the part of a power-wielding male class to subjugate women. And there, you know, there are even echoes of it and hints at it. When you see in Genesis during the Abraham story and the references to Sarah, it's obvious that she was part of a religious, she is said to have been part of a religious tradition that predated the rise of the children of Israel.
Mm-hmm. Children of Ham. Mm-hmm. Or is it whatever, yeah. At this point, it's just, I mean, come on, this is 2020. Like, you know, well, people are starting to bathe and luxuriate in their ignorance at this point.
Well, I don't think it's a matter of starting to. I think it's always been there, and some of us deluded ourselves over the past few decades into thinking that somehow we had eradicated some portion of it, when all it had really done is terminated and stayed resident. Like, you know, it's like the herpes zoster virus that causes chickenpox. You get over chickenpox and you say, I'm done with chickenpox. I'll never have chickenpox again. At least I'm immune to chickenpox. And it's because it's gone resident in your spinal fluid. And later in life, you look up and you go, God damn, I hurt. And they go, oh, it's because the shingles, and that's the same virus. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, it's like in many ways the election, the 11 years we've had between the inauguration of Barack Obama and the 3 years of Trump have shown us that the virus never went away. We weren't really cured, and it is back with a goddamn vengeance. Now, why do I mention Barack Obama? Because it was the election of Barack Obama that re-weaponized racism.
I wish you would do a whole program. That is undeniable now. And that you said a mouthful. And when folks continue to deny that, and they deny the fact that Hillary Clinton was the worst president we never had. You know, in their mind, because they, for some reason, they think
Benghazi.
She was president. You know,
but her emails.
It's just getting played out. Okay, so wow. All right, second topic. Now you brought it up, and I'm glad you mentioned it first. Because I've been thinking about this, because we're of a certain age. And it seems like, you know, these viruses, the reason they attack us is because they jump species.
Right.
And that's what I'm concerned about with this COVID-19, formerly known as, you know, the coronavirus. I'm concerned that these things jump species. And it's just moving. It has moved so fast. Every time it gets worse, I mean, come on. What the hell is going on here? Are you concerned about that?
That's
what they do is mutate.
Look, and we live in a country where we do our dead level best to deny the realities of evolution. And so, you know, we don't get thought on that deep a level. That's why, like I said, I shared that specific statement from that one public health doctor who said, you know, no, this isn't from some secret, super double secret probation bioweapons lab, damn it. And the fact of the matter is they do mutate and they evolve and they do so. Look. A virus that kills its host is not a successful virus, because that means that the virus then has to find somewhere else to live. And so they do mutate, and they change over generations. It's one of those things that you have to get in your head, and it's a little difficult at first. Individuals don't evolve. Populations do. And so as a result of that, when you've got the densest, when you've got the densest population on Earth, the most overpopulated continent on Earth, then the opportunities for viruses to mutate and evolve at breakneck speed are enhanced by the population density. When you add into it that these densely populated countries cannot feed themselves, then you're going to wind up with alternative food sources, and you're going to wind up messing around inside species that might ought be better off left alone. And that's probably way, way, way overbroad on my part, but it's not an entirely incorrect statement.
I got no problem with it. I don't see any problem with that statement at all, you know. And when you factor in China
knows that it is eating and breeding itself out of house and home.
Well, didn't you make a statement sometime not that long ago where you said they pretty much eaten everything that's running wild, and they have nothing left, like they don't have any wild game pretty much anymore, unless out in the hinterlands.
I don't know the current status, but I know what was reported to me, and this was years ago, probably the 90s or so. But, yeah, the person, the researcher who was over there for, like, months and months and months, said the biggest animal he ever saw was a songbird.
That might feed me for, like, 2 minutes. We're dealing with reality, and you know, we ship a lot of our chickens processed over here. It's so cheap, they send it back over here. Our pork, they process it over here and send it back over here. I don't know what's going to become of us. I just don't. This is crazy.
Now, it's my understanding we process it here.
Okay.
Because we've got those, we've got those massive kill facilities, and I mean massive. In places like Tar Heel, North Carolina, and the massive seas of filth and agricultural waste from the killing of tens of thousands of hogs every day.
The smell.
And Mexico has them too. And that's why the People's Republic of China bought and owns to this day Smithfield Meats.
That's where I was going with that. I was so pissed off when I learned that. Yeah. Yes.
Because what they're doing is externalizing all the environmental damage and costs of feeding themselves onto us. But it comes at a risk. Because if anything happens to that food supply, they are fucked. But the idea of globalism is to interlink the economy in such a way that people don't want to go to war, because even if you win, you lose. So I don't know if you noticed the news today, but Apple announced that their revenues were not going to be what they were forecast or projected to be for this quarter, because the coronavirus has so thoroughly fucked up their supply chain.
I heard a little something about that, and at the same time, when I stopped listening to the news today, the stock market was down around 140 or 50 points, something like that. Yes. So
I mean, and that comes after, an announcement a week or so ago that Hyundai had idled all of its plants in South Korea because it's.
Whoa.
Its supply chain had been completely fucked by the coronavirus in China that produces its parts.
Okay. See, there's so much to say about that, because we live in a place where if someone is sick and they don't have health insurance, they go to the emergency room when they're like past sick and they're on their deathbed, or they go and they go broke, or they don't have the money to pay, and those medical bills follow you. And, like I keep saying, we do not live in a bubble. When you like that cheap food in this $10 economy, that cook in there, he's coming to work with hepatitis, he or she, hepatitis.
Just an ugly case of the flu. Well, I got to go into work anyway because I can't not be paid.
Right.
And then you've got silly people. And by the way, it's getting more difficult in some places to find surgical masks the masks that you would use if you're, say, drywalling and sanding or something. Because people think that that'll somehow keep them from getting sick. It won't.
No, it won't. It won't. It won't. It won't. Well, I mean, that's the problem with the folks that we don't agree with. They think because they live in a gated community, or they live here, they live there, and they don't have to deal with it. But you know, think about this, the plantation owners. Now, they would whip somebody's father and have their daughter fix their food. You know, oh, you just beat my daddy half to death, and I'm going to make your dinner.
Well, you know, we all saw, who was it? We all saw Cecily Tyson spit in Sandy in Sandy Duncan's cup in The Roots.
Yeah, this is like, well, cognitive dissonance. Oh boy, well, I just on top of this, the planet is just hyper warming up now. Spring is coming, man. We have not gotten cold. I mean, we had a couple cold days. I mean, it's nasty, but it's too fucking warm. It's rainy. It's just something ain't right. It's just the planet is sick. Gaia, the planet is sick. I mean, to me, I view the planet like a terrarium. You know, I mean, we have a sealed air.
You there, Todd?
You don't hear me?
Nah, I do now. You said
we
have a terrarium.
We live in a terrarium. I mean, the Earth is a terrarium. We have a sealed atmosphere for the most part. And, you know, things, you know, that's how we have this nice little comfortable place to live. So, you know, everything kind of stays within. And you start. And I think, you know, I had a buddy of mine some years ago, and he would always say, you know, if you have to bring things out of the earth that deep, it's no good can come of that. You know, think about coal, uranium. I mean, I understand people like gold and all that, but you can find gold on the surface in the stream. When we start digging, and this goes on to the next issue, and then maybe we can end pleasantly. I really felt like the beginning of the end for us as a species, or for regular folk who aren't wealthy, you know, people who don't have to work for a check, people who are, you know, live on dividends and moving money around, they'll probably be okay. They have a plan, because why in the world would you allow a system where you can put chemicals into the water table, all kinds of toxic shit into the water table to get something we shouldn't be using anyway? You're getting the last little bit out of that. I mean, I remember in junior high school them talking about shale. I remember that shit. That's what they're doing. They're getting the last little bit of fossil fuel out of the shale rock.
Well, you know, it reminds me of all the stuff we were told about peak oil.
Mm-hmm.
And that phrase just sort of disappeared a while back. Don't really know why, because the reality didn't change. But the peak oil theory said that as the resource becomes more scarce, you will do more ridiculous things to get it. And it will be harder and harder to obtain. And so if you look at the hellscape of Alberta or North Dakota or wherever the toxic tar sands are, that's what you do in peak oil.
But that's our drinking water.
No, that's somebody else's drinking water. That's not the drinking water of some oil company executive. Why they drink water based? They drink water that comes from icebergs that have been shot with a rifle, and the iceberg collected, and the water melted. And I mean, that's what they're doing to the water in Alberta or in North Dakota. That's not J.P. Gottrocks' drinking water. That's just some proles drinking water. Fuck them. The Earth can do without them.
Well, you sound like that fat fuck who has lung cancer.
Them's fighting words, Todd.
No names.
You know, I've got in the stack, I've got some dickhead from yesterday, from some AstroTurf organization, saying, well, you know, the climate alarmists aren't calling for a plan that includes nuclear and fracking, so they're not serious about climate change. And then makes the, Jesus, for somebody who's trained to look for this stuff, it'll make you bark. Because he said something like, why, I mean, frack gas doesn't have near the amount of carbon potential that coal does. It's cleaner than coal. You lying bastard.
Who said that crazy shit?
All right, you want to know, I'll tell you. Hold on.
That's not
same. It's some guy named Michael Schellenberger writing at Forbes, and he claims to. He says, "I write about energy and the environment." Yeah, well, you don't write about energy and the environment from the standpoint of somebody who gives a fuck about either one. Well, I mean, he gives a fuck about the energy.
Forbes.
Let's see. Apocalyptic environmentalists like Sanders, Thunberg, and Extinction Rebellion insist that if we don't enact their agenda, industrial civilization will come to an end. But if they are so concerned with protecting industrial civilization, why do they advocate solutions that would end it? The Industrial Revolution in England was only made possible through intensified agriculture and the use of coal for manufacturing, which delivered far more energy for less, far less labor. While the energy density of a lump of coal is twice that of a lump of wood, the power density of a coal mine is 25,000 times larger than that of forests. And on in such...
Okay, well, where's the mention of the mercury, of the reason we can't eat fish? You can't just go to your local river and catch some fish if you're a little low on money.
Let's see. Michael Schellenberger is a Time Magazine Hero of the Environment and Green Book Award winner, a frequent contributor to the New York Times, Washington Post, Wall Street Journal, Scientific American, and other publications.
What?
His TED Talks have been viewed over 5 million times. And so, people are just trying to scare people to death. Frack gas is so fucking groovy, and so is nuclear power.
All right, you're making that up. That's crazy. That's not even logical. Come on.
Last year, Sanders called climate change an existential threat. Extinction Rebellion said billions will die. And Thunberg said, I don't want you to be hopeful about climate change. I want you to panic. But if Sanders, Thunberg, and Extinction Rebellion are so alarmed about carbon emissions, why are they failing to halt the use of why are they fighting to halt the use of two technologies, fracking and nuclear, that are most responsible for reducing them? And we're back to that business I was talking with Scott about last night, where you divide something by two, and you cut it in half, and you cut it in half, and you cut it in half, and you never get to zero. And we have to get to zero carbon emissions. And getting there is a frightening prospect. Because, as I've said all along, nobody's really telling anybody on planet Earth what that actually means. And we're talking about massive cultural change. We're talking about, at the same time, massive human migrations. We saw a relatively small one send Europe into paroxysms and lead to the rise of the new fascism. Just from the refugee migration crisis out of Syria and places like Libya, okay, that was relatively small.
Right.
You know, when a few tens of millions of people get on the move, it's going to get real interesting, real fast.
That's what's coming. We all remember Don Steinbeck and the Grapes of Wrath. So imagine that. On a global scale, it's coming soon, like tomorrow, next week, you know, next few months. It's already started. Matter of fact, you've had callers who know over in Syria, you know, things have changed so much. And people, that's one of the reasons people were migrating and moving around. But to see, now that you got on this topic, we're fighting against what gives us life. And it's nonsensical. Only because folks they feel like they won't be in charge anymore. You can't fight against what gives us life. Our earliest folks, they understood, they worshiped Ra. Even if you look at those halos around Jesus' head, that came from the Egyptians. You know, they knew the sun god. That's what that was about. That's why that sun was on the back.
Right. There's nothing particularly original about Christianity. It's a little bit of Mithra. It's a little bit of Ra. Stir in some Apollo and Dionysus for the devil, and bang, there you go.
It's alchemy. It's religious. You know, come on, we're back to Joseph Campbell again. I mean, you know, come on. And it's not good or bad. It's logical. It just is. But why fight against what's here? This is what we have. And we had the technology to store it. Don't listen to that fat fuck with lung cancer or the mentally ill fascists. Oh, like windmills. You know, fuck them. They're fucking idiots. They don't know what the hell is going on. That's disgusting. But we're in this box now. It's awful. It's really awful. And this is unnecessary. And I don't know what it's going to take. Maybe we have to have some aliens to come down and beat us in the head and say, look, you're stupid.
Yeah, but I don't know if they're going to come down and say, Klaatu Barada Nikto. That's the problem. They may be the Ganymed, and they bring that book called To Serve Man, and it turns out, we're toxic. They'd never eat us. We're an entire planet of mad cow disease. No, you don't want us. Trust us.
They're just avoiding us. They're like, oh, they're the plague. We're the plague.
Yeah, but remember, in the To Serve Man episode of The Twilight Zone, they're taking humans to their wonderful happy planet, where the humans will be happy and get to play in the woods and run on the farm upstate.
Yeah, that's quarantine.
No, those are breeding pens. Breeding and feed. Yeah. Those are feedlots.
Okay. I know the one you're talking about. Right, exactly. Oh, be happy. Yeah, just like they do the pigs. Right, exactly. Yep. Eat well, be happy. Oh, speaking of food. So, you know, linguine, I think, is underrated.
Yeah, you know? I like fettuccine better than linguine because it's got a little bit of egg in it. And I think it makes it a little bit richer and gives it a little more interesting texture. But linguine with
I don't dislike fettuccine.
But linguine with a beautiful white clam sauce. There's a place down in Charleston that's been open for 100 years called Leonora's. Really simple place, but my God, the linguine with the white clam sauce will make you weep.
Jeez.
Oh, by the way, about the coronavirus, Robert in Australia writes. Don't panic. The mortality rate is around 2.5%. You're more likely to be killed by just about anything else than the coronavirus. If you're still concerned, just avoid the following. Air conditioning, especially where it's recycled air, malls, theaters, flying, see air conditioning, crowded public places. When in public places, avoid touching railings and door handles. Positive things to do. Don't panic. Wash your hands a lot. Avoid long-distance travel. See flying. On the other hand, if you really want to be freaked out, go and watch my favorite film on pandemics, Contagion, 2011, drama sci-fi, 1 hour, 46 minutes. That's Robert and Oz. And there is there's a lot of truth in all of that. Just like they found out that a majority of the mass graves in that Lincolnshire mass burial were people between 1 and 17 years old, there are populations that are more susceptible and have worse outcomes than the general population.
Well, I firmly believe, though, that we're in uncharted territory. The planet is heating up. You know, we're so close now to to the line of production, and we have this global economy and jet travel, and things are moving fast. You know, something is not right. Something's amiss. And like you said, the nature, when you understand, you know, if people were paying attention in biology class, a virus is a very simple organism. But it's on a mission. That's why the food
It is on the same mission that every other living thing on this planet is on. Survival.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to go back to, because I'm afraid I may have been slightly misunderstood. I want to go back to something from Lady B. Thinning the herd. So wait, you mean to tell me this coronavirus is a convenient way for China to exercise population control? No, I don't think it is. Do you think President Xi is careful to don his hazmat gear every day before leaving the house? I had no idea that a continent as large as China would suffer from overpopulation. Well, China's just a part of Asia, but it is the most densely populated, I'm pretty sure, between China and India, the two most densely populated places on planet Earth.
And they abut each other up near where the Uyghurs are. See, where the Chinese Muslims are, that's a funny region, man. You got Tajikistan. There's a lot of shit going on. That's the Silk Road.
Yeah, and of course, they've got their Belt and Road program and all the stuff right. They're doing in Africa. But to try to stick with what Lady B was talking about, mm-hmm. I had no idea that some place as large as China would suffer from overpopulation. If anything, wouldn't that be a testament to high birth survival rates and longevity? Educate me, you wonderful pedant. How did China get so big in the first place, and is it possible that in the future the world would welcome a hearty cleansing plague every now and then? I don't know that the world welcomes it, but we do know that the bubonic plague that swept the globe it didn't sweep the globe. But it started in Asia in the early 14th century, and then by 1348, it had arrived via ship in Constantinople and then Venice, and then it just started crawling over the continent, and eventually gets to England and Scandinavia, and by the time it was done, it had wiped out a third of the population of Europe. It had been equally devastating in Asia. You know who it didn't touch? It didn't touch this continent, because rats can't swim that far. Remember?
Well, that's what I was about to say. We didn't have the rats on the ship.
The flea bites the rat, and then the flea jumps on and bites the human, and game on. China, the beginning of the population explosion in China is concurrent with the so-called New World, and the Columbian and what is called the Columbian Exchange. The diet of after 1492, the diet of the entire planet changed dramatically, and a lot more caloric resources became available with less effort. And, you know, from time to time when we get into our food porn segments, Todd, I've talked about all the things. I mean, imagine Vietnamese or Thai or Indian food without the burn of chili pepper. Imagine the cuisine of Italy without a tomato. Ireland and Germany without potatoes. Well, in 1491, that was the world. People didn't eat a shit ton of potatoes; they ate a shit ton of turnips.
Mm-hmm.
But chili peppers. That one time I was in D.C. and walked into the Afghan restaurant over in Adams Morgan,
mm-hmm.
and looked in there, the national dish of Afghanistan, and it was made out of pumpkins. And just because my brain works the way it does, I looked and I said, well, it hasn't been the national dish of Afghanistan for very fucking long, because pumpkins didn't get, God only knows when pumpkins got there, but it wasn't before 1491.
No, it's from the New World. They're from over here.
Yeah. Beans, maize, and in the case of Asia, the sweet potato. The sweet potato. If you read Charles C. Mann's 1491 and 1493, 1493 in particular, I think, he talks about the effect of the of sweet potato agriculture on Asia and how it led to a population explosion, because if you've got lots of food, you can feed lots of people. If you've got more food, you can feed more people. And poor people who, you know, don't have palaces and stuff, you know what poor people do to amuse themselves, Todd? They fuck. They fuck.
Well, it doesn't cost anything.
There's an old Italian proverb that says, bed is the poor man's opera. And it's absolutely true. So, you know, we do worry about, and the public health people worry a lot about, and that's why we have shit hemorrhages when some new hemorrhagic fever or some new novel coronavirus breaks out. Because we never know which one is going to be the one. But we do know that we will probably fuck up the response. Because part of the reason that it ran so high, ran so fast and scared the living bejesus out of China is because China has an authoritarian, closed-off, non-transparent, not forthcoming government that didn't say, hey, we got a problem here, help.
Yeah, that's the problem.
Nothing to see here. This is not the virus you're looking
for. You can't trust their number. You can't trust. I mean, look, they tell the truth when it's convenient. If it's a hard truth, we have to look at them with a jaundiced eye.
Dude, they are trying to keep the ruling class in China is trying to keep 8 billion people, that's on the planet, however many, 4 billion, whatever, people in China from rising up and killing their ass. Do you have any idea how difficult that is?
I think about it a lot. That's because I always think about Hong Kong. I was like, man, this will be trouble. That's a big job. But think about it. That's a hard job. And I don't want to say keep people under control because that sounds bad, but they have all these different religions and nationalities, you know, like we're talking about the Uyghurs. You know, that section is amazing. That part of their country is that, I mean, come on.
And so every time somebody says democracy within the territorial confines of the People's Republic of China, somebody has a hissy. Oh, fuck no. You kidding? We're going to listen to the voices of a few billion people? No.
Wait, can you blame?
And then you've got the example of India, which is supposed to be a secular democracy and has been overrun by a right-wing fascist government.
Yep.
That's now engaged in institutional discrimination and against some religions and advancement of others. It's a really good argument for something called the separation of church and state. But all the Franklin Grahams and Jim Bakers of the world can see is that it would be really cool if we could just consolidate all the power in our hands. Because with all the power comes all the money.
You made a great argument as to why religion and politics should never meet, and that even Pontius Pilate knew that.
Yeah, well, the Romans were good administrators, but every time democracy rises up or democracy develops, concurrently, a movement will develop to try to defeat democracy. It's kind of like what I was saying to Dave earlier. If you get Social Security, you've got a Republican trying to make sure fewer people can get it. If you've got a disability program, you got a Republican out there trying to write the rules to make it harder to get it. if you've got workers' comp, you got a Republican out there trying to keep people from being able to access it. If you've got unemployment, you got people trying to keep unemployed people from being able to collect it. And without fail, these things all are perpetuated by Republicans. The best example of all is the National Labor Relations Act passed under FDR and by the Democratic Congress. And about 15, 20 years later, along comes a guy named Robert Taft, son of, I think, William Howard Taft, out of Ohio. Well, you know, deep, deep political roots. And he comes up with something called the Taft-Hartley Act. And the next thing you know, many of the gains that have been hard fought and won by labor get hogtied. And so the power of the strike is dramatically diminished. The idea of a general strike is fucking illegal. Wildcat strikes, illegal. So, you know, every time the people get something, there's a Republican waiting to try to take it away.
Now, see, I wasn't even going to mention this, but you just brought it up. And I'm waiting for one of the people that we're going to have to vote for to say, you know, this $10 economy is nonsense. We have to do better than this. See, we're already immersed in this. Now, globalism is not a bad thing, I don't think, because it's inevitable anyway. But there's a way to do it and a way not to do it. But this $10 economy, no matter where you go, I mean, unless you go to very large cities, you know, that is, people are making $10 an hour for what folks used to make $20, $30 to do. In a lot of cases, not all cases, but many cases. That's not a sustainable, workable system. It's not. It absolutely is not.
No.
And so anyway, because how are you supposed to buy a linguine for $10 if you're making $10 an hour? Because then you have to get the chicken breast.
If you buy the Kroger brand linguine, it's about $2 for a little 1 pound package. But plain linguine sucks. You got to sauce it, man.
You got to sauce it. You have to get. All right, this is where I was going with this. The thin linguine. And it's not cappellini. It's named for it, but it's not the really wide linguine. It's like in between. It's a delicate.
I thought linguine was just linguine.
Oh, no.
I mean, it's flat noodles about the same size as fettuccine.
There's different widths. There are different widths.
Okay.
I like the narrow. See, that's what I'm saying. The narrow width for what I'm talking about is perfect. Because, you know, I like the cappellini. The angel hair is great, but that's not great for everything. And I like the fettuccine, like you say, the egg noodles and fettuccine, that's extra vitamin. You know, why not? Go for it. And then you can use the water when you boil it, you know, use that water to make bread with. But you have to have the pesto, right, to get your spinach. You can use frozen spinach. You know,
spinach pesto is good. Spinach.
Oh.
Basil pesto can be overpowering.
Well, yeah, you know, you make it to your palate. Your palate's content, so you get that together, and then you grow your chicken or your pork, either a boneless pork chop or flattened out chicken breast, and you put that on top with some good dry Parmesan cheese that's mixed in with the linguine and the spinach and the pesto. Shoot, man, I'm telling you, small glass of wine of your choice. Oh my God!
Yeah, like I said, that little restaurant down in Florence. I got to find somebody that can do something similar. The freshly made raviolis with the tomato cream sauce and the golden brown roasted mozzarella shreds across. Oh my God! It was Jesus. But we've got breaking food porn news, Todd.
No way.
Yeah, I just got a picture from Sparky. The only thing Sparky typed was, "It's here." And it's a photograph of a one-pound package of Benton's bacon.
Oh, the Benton's bacon.
Yes. Things are about to get really tasty at Shea Sparky.
So you sent that to him?
No. He ordered it and they shipped it. Because it's vacuum sealed, it keeps. It doesn't even require refrigeration necessarily.
Yeah.
I mean, it's best kept refrigerated, but you don't have to freeze it or anything. It'll keep for a while if you can keep out of it.
It won't last. Are you kidding? You know how bacon is. My God, once you start eating it, that's bacon. Shit. And then the bacon grease. But what is it about bacon grease? Nothing sticks. Just a little bit of bacon grease. Nothing's going to stick.
And that's the only way to make a pan of fried potatoes. You dice your potatoes. You peel your potatoes. You dice them really small. Not teeny tiny, like not like minced or shredded or anything, but then you get that bacon grease in your iron skillet really, 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 really hot. And you throw in your onions and your green peppers and your potatoes, and you put a lid on them and you leave them alone, and that they get this beautiful, beautiful golden crust on them. And you pull the lid off and you try to turn them as best you can so that you get the other side back on, and you cover them again, let them cook. Stir them around, heaven.
Bam.
Yeah.
Well, okay.
And Ferg is NPO right now until his procedure tomorrow. And I told him when we get home, I'll get the best. It's the best sourdough I can get my hands on around here. It ain't Publix, and it's not Trader Joe's, but whatever.
What is PO?
No, it's just a Pepperidge Farm sourdough. NPO, Nihil Peros, nothing by mouth. In other words, he's got to starve for 24 hours.
I don't know what's going on with that.
Well, when you have any procedure, the medical standard of care.
I didn't know he had a procedure.
I said that at the beginning of the program. But anyway, I'm going to gently toast some sourdough bread. Cover it with my homemade pimento cheese that I made the other day, and some sliced tomato, and a couple of slices of Kaneka bacon.
Oh,
and that'll be a great way to break his fast.
Sounds beautiful.
By the way, Randy in PA says tricolor rotini holds the sauce better.
Oh, that's the little corkscrews. Yeah. Well, you know, that's another option. I mean, there's enough pasta out there for, it depends on what you want to do with it. It's amazing, man. That's a unifier. Food is a unifier. Good food is a unifier. And I guess that's why, you know, since ancient times, you know, when you come to someone's home.
Well, you said, you know, you mentioned the Silk Road. Pasta is one of those things that traveled it. So is gunpowder. At about the same time.
How about that?
Because, you know, the purpose of pasta is to make transportable grain that won't go bad. Instead of having, you know, instead of having to pack your flour all over the pit, you make it, you dry it, you take it with you. And, man, that is something I want really, really bad right now. Because I was getting some really, a really good version of it down in Alabama. And up here, where we've got okay Chinese, it ain't going to happen. But that dish that's known as Singapore Mei Fun, Singapore rice noodle.
With
the really, really, really thin... rice vermicelli with the curry sauce.
Yeah, you get translucent.
With the curry, and it turns yellow with the curry sauce. And there's egg and onion and chicken and pork. I love it, and I can't find it. Maybe if I can get to Beckley, I think there's a place maybe I can get some.
So you got to go to an Asian. I have to drive literally about 42 miles one way, but I have to do it when I'm over on that side of town to do something else. But there's a great Asian soup. I went there last week. And they have 50-pound bags of sticky rice. I think this is where the Asian restaurateurs go. Because they have Japanese, Chinese, all different. And they have those noodles you're talking about from Singapore. In fact, they have Tatarte's noodles from Indonesia. And they tell you how to cook it. So I know what you're talking about. It takes on flavor quickly. What you're cooking.
Oh, yeah.
And you pull it out, and it comes in this big bag, like it's this big cellophane bag, and it crinkles, it cracks really easily. Because I'm big on the pad thai thing, and so I can use that for pad thai. But yeah, they have that chili paste, that really hot chili paste.
Righteous.
They even ask you, are you sure you want to buy this? Yeah, I want to buy it. Are you sure? Yes. It's hot.
Yeah, and I'm not making fun or mocking or anything, but that one little Chinese place I found down in Florence that was so good. He asked me, he said, where are you from? And I told him West Virginia, and I said, you? He said, Brooklyn. But he got sick and tired of trying to raise his kids in all the hubbub and madness, and moved down and bought a Chinese restaurant in Florence, Alabama, and couldn't be happier. But they made an awesome Singapore mei fun. And I'd look at him and go, spicy. No, really spicy. He said, you want hot? I want hot. He said, I make spicy for you. Then the next time I came in, he said, spicy enough? Yep. Do it again. I ate a lot of Singapore rice noodle while I was down there because it was like $6. Hell, I couldn't go to the grocery store for that.
You can't make it that cheap. Wow. That sounds great. Well, that's a beautiful thing, man. There are still more good things in life.
Wow, check it out. Ralph's just sent me a Singapore rice noodle recipe, so that I may wind up doing it here.
I read the label on this thing. It's right from Indonesia, and they have this big prawn on the label, because fish sauce is big. You got to keep the shells on it and get all that flavor. But I've been hoarding it. I only use it for special occasions when I really think that, it's going to be just right. But oh my God! So they had the miso. Like I got the bulk miso in bulk. I got two bags, and I got one. Put them in the freezer now. Because I'm just telling you, man, miso soup. I got nori.
When warm weather comes, I am making my tonkatsu broth. That's just all there is to it.
I forgot about that. See, you got to get outside and play, man. You have the real wok. You got the cast iron slate. I think ready for your restaurant. That's what I think. But think about it. You have the acorn. You have the cast iron slate. You got the wok. You can do anything now.
Not quite. I need to add a deep fryer to the mix. And
that's easy though. Come on. That's pedestrian. You can pick that up in at the pawn shop. You can get that.
Well, yeah.
He's a crackhead, man.
Ah, Jesus! But no, I can't. I can't wait to hear from Sparky, and because he's gonna fry the Benton's bacon in his air fryer. It'll be curious. I'll be curious to hear how that comes out.
That pack may not make it through the night.
But I mean, that's why I'm counting the. Life is short, and life is short, and we ought not hurry any days along. But I'm like, Jesus, please, February. Because this happens to me every fucking year. It's like my birthday happens, and then the day, and then February begins with the anniversary of my dad's passing away. And then February just lasts forever.
Well, it's almost gone, and if you notice, the days are longer. Spring is coming, man. Spring is almost here.
It'll get to you before it gets to me.
You say that. I don't know that there's that much of a difference. But
No, believe me, I know the difference. I've been there. It'll be okay. Yeah, it'll be nice for you long before it's nice for me. I mean, Jesus, probably. Well, but it's so weird up here. I mean, I'm seeing the daffodils, you know, the jonquils come out. The buttercups.
Well, they're out here. What is that?
Yeah, I'm a good 1,600 feet above mean sea level. You're maybe what, 20? And you're
That's
300, 400 miles south of me? You get spring before I get spring by a long shot.
Yeah, we're in a different planting zone. That's true.
I mean, you know, but, again, the old rule of thumb here is you don't plant your garden until after Mother's Day. And further up into PA, it's not until after June 1.
Yeah, boy.
Whereas down where I grew up, gardens were going in mid-March.
See, that you brought up that June 1 thing. Now I remember the pools would open right after, like, you'd be open Memorial Day weekend.
Yeah, but traditionally that's when
it might
pools
be warm,
open.
But it might be chilly. But then it'd be pretty damn cold. It wouldn't warm up till 1st of July, really. I mean, it wouldn't be like comfortably warm.
Yeah.
Nowadays, shit, it could be hot in fucking December. I'm just saying the planet is sick, but
it's like something Darlene said a little bit ago. Even though it's a big planet and can take some punishment, I think it's in a delicate balance that can easily get thrown into chaos quickly. That's why climate change is tough for people to understand. To fuck up the planet as badly as we have done shows just how unbelievably destructive the human species can be. And see, the other part of that,
I agree with Darlene.
That goes back to that dude writing at Forbes, is that, you know, one need not have hydrocarbons to fuck up one's world. Because, of course, there are numerous examples of cultures that did that and came to no good end. The intensely isolated culture of Rapa Nui. The various kingdoms of the Maya, and the Chaco Canyon culture, the Anasazi in New Mexico and Colorado, you know, Mesa Verde and all of that. And in almost every instance there, they wiped themselves out by deforestation.
Easter Island.
Yeah, that's what I meant, Rapa Nui.
My ignorance. Mm-hmm.
And deforestation, England, Spain, you know, Spain still has not recovered fully from the deforestation that took place 2,200 years ago when they cut down everything that would burn to smelt the silver ore that was coming out of the mines. And you can see it in the Greenland ice cores. You can identify precisely when they were deforesting Spain, because the ash is in the ice.
Those core samples are revealing. But you know, and I don't know if everyone has seen those pictures, because I don't know that they're public, but you have to kind of search for them. And I'm talking about Alberta. You know, where it's a moonscape. It looks like Mars. or the moon.
Yeah,
the
word hellscape, whether you're talking about a mountaintop removal site or the tar sands in Alberta, hellscape is the word. You could have done the location shooting for Mordor in The Lord of the Rings in Alberta.
And you're not exaggerating. And they have those Caterpillar trucks that have the wheels that are, you know, as tall as a house.
Yeah, those things rumble around on mountaintop removal sites, too. And they rumble around on massive strip mine sites in Australia. And here's the wild part. On some of those strip mine sites in Australia, those trucks are remote operated. Those are driverless trucks.
Wow. Whatever happened to Trivial Pursuit?
Well, I got to get out of here, but it's been a fun conversation, Todd. I'm glad you called.
Thanks, man. Me too. Talk to you later.
Enjoy, man. Later.
All right.
Go to Publix. Somebody's got to get some sourdough at Publix just so I can have the vicarious enjoyment of it. So here we are. We will close the program with $170 to raise. Thank you very kindly for the challenge, Steve from New York, and for the response to Arnold and PA, and thank you, Anatole. Thank you very kindly. And we'll be back for prayer meeting Wednesday tomorrow. Wait a minute. What's that, Billable Rick? Stop telling us why we should hate February, Bob. Guess what? This month is even longer than usual because of a leap year. Oh, I know. Enjoy the extra day of February this year. Hey, let's do a February 29th on the front porch. I know it's on a Saturday this year, but why not? If you were born on February 20th of the old decade, which ends with zero, you people.
Stop telling us why to hate February.
Yeah, okay. You hate it. You hate it any way you want to, Billable. Because, you know, you're just that gosh darned awesome. And we got fucked by Frontier right at the end of the program. Thanks, Frontier. And thanks for letting me know. Dave writing, stream, the stream they say on the far side of the hill. Stream, it's going away to where the grass is greener still. Yeah, I didn't think I'd know the melody, did you? You know, you get me singing. That's what happens when we pull up $170 short. Oh, well. So thanks all of you who do keep the program on the air through your kind contributions, whether they be subscriptions via PayPal or Patreon or a la carte or some combination of the three. Thank you so very much to all of you who share your precious finite time engaging in the program, however you so choose to do. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thanks to Sparky and Steve in the chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, headon.live. Thank you, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, 20 years at the forefront of the struggle for human rights and environmental justice in Appalachia. Oh, yeah, I know. 1,600 feet above sea level, Lady B says, reaches down and affectionately pats Bob on the head. Yeah, I know. Mountain snobbery. But see, these are older mountains. These are the oldest mountains on Earth. And they used to look like your Rockies. That's what mountains look like when they're just you know, little whippersnappers. Yeah, that's what we tell ourselves here. And, you know, sometimes you can look at an Appalachian mountain and you can see how tall it used to be. It's kind of like how you can see the darkened part of the moon in that's in shadow from the reflected light of, yeah, right. Cold-hearted orb that rules the night, steals the color from our sight. Yellow, gray, and black is white, and we decide which is right and which is an illusion. Hi, I'm Bob, and I suffer from old DJ disease. I'm periodically overtaken by old rock and roll lyrics, and there's nothing I can do about it. But always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Later, y'all.